I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday afternoon. Money in elections this hour with Theo Meyer, ProPublica's reporting fellow, who writes that most people have come to associate outside money, hundreds of millions of dollars from politically active nonprofits and super PACs that's pouring into American elections, with conservatives. But an analysis of North Carolina's hotly contested Senate race and a number of competitive state races shows that liberals are asserting themselves as never before to stay in the game. We'll ask him also to comment on U.S. District Judge Rudolph Randa's decision yesterday ordering a halt to the John Doe investigation targeting the recall campaign of Governor Scott Walker and conservative groups. He sided with the Wisconsin Club for Growth, saying that that organization and its treasurer have found a way to circumvent campaign finance laws, and that circumvention should not and cannot be condemned or restricted. Instead, it should be recognized as promoting political speech. This ruling will probably be appealed, but he did refer frequently to Citizens United in his ruling, the Supreme Court case that found corporations can spend limitless sums in elections. And he also referred to the ruling last month in the Supreme Court that eliminated the overall limit on what individuals can give to congressional races. So that story is still a story in progress, but it's a major ruling. And we asked our guest to look at that because we thought you may want to comment on it. Also, last week, Vermont became the first state to call for a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution to reverse the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision. So again, we take on this issue of the huge amounts of money in politics and welcome your phone calls. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Theodore Meyer, ProPublica's reporting fellow, started there as a reporting intern. He's worked at the New York Times and the Seattle Times and has written about all kinds of things, Syrian refugees to Triceratops to data centers, Google and Facebook operating in rural Oregon. He's reported from Madrid for Global Post and is with us this hour. And we thank you very much, Theo, for being with us. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we booked you on the North Carolina story, but just a couple comments. I know that this is something that you probably will write on eventually, but a major ruling yesterday by District Judge Randa on this case. It's been going on, this John Doe 2, for a couple of years now in the state, and he threw out the whole thing and said the records had to be destroyed, et cetera, and did make reference to Citizens United and to the ruling just a couple weeks ago by the Supreme Court. I would imagine that at some point, if this is appealed, all of this, what's happening in Wisconsin, may also make its way to the Supreme Court. Do you think?
I think it's certainly possible that the ruling is, in fact, appealed. I haven't covered this case. I took a look at Judge Ranta's opinion this morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's another shot, though, in sort of the back and forth over how much the government should regulate political spending and when, if ever, those regulations intrude on the First Amendment's free speech protections.
Mm-hmm. And whether or not it's this issue advocacy or if it's outright saying that you are expressing support for a candidate, it gets a little bit confusing, doesn't it?
Yeah, the rules that the IRS has and that the FEC has over what is and is not political spending do get a bit fuzzy. Over what is, you know, legitimate issue advocacy, over issues such as fracking, for instance, in North Carolina, and when specific candidates are mentioned in the ad, whether that crosses the line into more sort of election advocacy territory.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to North Carolina and look at this large issue of the amount of money that we're spending in politics now. And it's absolutely huge. You think about where all of this money could be going. And we normally think, as you remind us, of conservative groups. But in North Carolina, they have really picked up their funding, haven't they?
So we analyzed television ad bookings for North Carolina's three largest markets in the first 4 months of this year. North Carolina is, of course, the location of a crucial United States Senate race, one of the most important ones this year, and one of the ones in which the most money has poured into.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that liberal outside groups were spending almost exactly as much as conservative ones in the Senate race.
And that's quite a change. When you look at the midterms of 2012, you quote figures of how much conservatives were spending and how much liberals were spending, and it was quite a different story.
Yeah, it's true. The Center for Responsive Politics in Washington found that in the 2012 election cycle overall, that conservative groups had spent almost 2.5 times what liberal groups had. The conservatives had spent about $719 million to $293 million by liberal outside groups.
Mm-hmm.
But at least in North Carolina and possibly elsewhere, that gap really seems to be closing.
And when you talk about this money spent by so-called dark money groups, what's dark money?
Well, so there are different kinds of outside groups. The ones that we saw in North Carolina fell into super PACs, which must report their donors. And a variety of nonprofits. There are different kinds, 501c3s and c4s and c6s, but which are not required to report their donors, and some of which are permitted to spend at least some of their money on politics. Those nonprofits that do not disclose their donors, because there certainly are a few nonprofits that do disclose, but the ones that don't disclose are what we're talking about when we say dark money.
So do you have any idea, Theo, who they are?
Yes, we know who the groups are. The question is who is funding those groups. And sometimes it's possible to trace the funding back to, other nonprofits that give money to nonprofits that spend some of their money on politics. But sometimes it's very hard to know where that money is coming from.
So we have to know, I'm not sure I understand this, we have to know what the nonprofit is, but not who the contributors are to the nonprofit?
So if you're looking at, say, a television ad contract, it will say on that contract that's filed with the station, and many of these are available online for at least the major stations in major markets in the U.S. If you look at that contract, it will a nonprofit such as Americans for Prosperity, or a liberal nonprofit such as Patriot Majority USA. It will say that this group bought the ad, but you don't know where that group is getting its money.
Mm-hmm. Is it hard for you as an investigative reporter to find out who those people are?
Yes, in most cases, finding out individual donors like that is almost impossible. Sometimes you will have networks of nonprofits, such as what's known as the Koch Network, where a nonprofit higher up in the food chain will give money to another nonprofit, which will give money to another nonprofit, which will then spend some of that money on politics.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, you can trace sort of where the money is coming from to an extent, but you still can't get to, exactly where it's coming from. We know some of the people who have donated to the Koch Network in the past, but we have no way of knowing who funds certain groups that are high up in the food chain, like Freedom Partners Chamber of Commerce.
Mm-hmm. You write that so far in the 2014 cycle, and I'm wondering when this started, groups focused on the environment have led the way for liberal dark money groups. Are those ads that specifically are in favor of Senator Kagan, or are they anti who her opponents may have been and now who her opponent will be?
Well, there are a few groups, at least in North Carolina, that have been spending. A group called the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy has been spending on ads that sort of tout Kagan and say how great she is. And that's a sort of prominent environmental group. You also see this at the national level. Several environmental groups have said that they will be spending in these races.
One of the, you quote several people, this is Brad Crone, a Democratic political and public relations consultant who lives in Raleigh, who said, I've never seen the liberal side of the equation do anything like this. Why are they doing it? Do they simply have to? Do they believe to stay in the game here? Are ads that important? Money that important?
So Crone was talking about some of the other ads that we saw that were actually at the state level at North Carolina. In the past, you'd seen conservative groups, such as one called Real Jobs NC, that paid for attack ads targeting North Carolina state senators. You saw this in the 2010 elections, for instance. But Brad Crone was saying that you had not seen liberal groups spending on state Senate races in North Carolina before. But there is a new sort of environmental group, a coalition, actually, of environmental nonprofits that has paid for a pretty large amount of ads that call out four Republican state senators for their support of fracking.
Mm. And those are airing already?
Yeah, those started airing in, I think, March, I believe.
Yeah. If you look at the North Carolina Senate race, which is going to be a tough one for Senator Hagan, the freshman Democrat, and now we know who her opponent is going to be in that race, do you have any idea how much money may be spent on that race?
I am not sure that I would hazard to guess. I'm sure it will be a large sum.
Yeah, it'll be huge, I would imagine, as will those other races that may be close because you got the control of the Senate at hand, right?
Millions and millions of dollars, and certainly I think most people would say probably more than was spent in 2010 or in 2012.
Yeah. And would you say that it's mostly going for television ads or radio ads, or where is all this money going?
Well, it's somewhat difficult to break down. We looked at all ads. So some ads must be reported to the Federal Election Commission, but some ads don't have to be. So when we did our analysis, we looked at every ad that television stations have uploaded to what's called the political file, and which is available on the Federal Communications Commission website. So anything that had been put in there, we looked at and analyzed and totaled up. So our analysis of spending is only of TV spending. It doesn't include, direct mail or yard signs or what have you.
Mm-hmm. It is so much money for TV stations, isn't it? It's just so much money. I'm old enough to remember the days when television stations used to have editorials on the air. They certainly don't do much of that anymore, but it would be hard for anybody to imagine editorializing against all of this money when they're certainly benefiting in a large way from it, aren't they?
It is a vast amount of money. And when you look at the individual contracts, which is what we did, you see there are plenty of $100,000, $200,000 contracts for ads over the course of a week or two.
Yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. We have yet to move into some other areas. Interestingly, not that other states are going to follow en masse, but Vermont became the first state last week to look at the possibility of a constitutional convention to get money out of politics. Is this something that we're concerned about as Americans? Is it something, do we equate money with speech and so it should be protected? You can also comment on the decision. Obviously, Theo wouldn't know as much about this in Wisconsin as we would, the John Doe 2 probe, which was called to a halt yesterday, and the federal judge Randa called for a destruction of all records. It may be appealed, but he made reference to the Supreme Court decision on Citizens United and the decision last month as well. So this is all at play and has to do with protected speech and the amount of money that's involved in campaigns and whether or not we know who the people are who are giving money to campaigns. Here it is, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. What do you think? Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls for Theo, ProPublica's reporting fellow, and we start our calls with Mike in Roberts. Hello, Mike.
Hi, Kathleen. Just some background information. Whenever there's talk about the moneyed interest in politics, people from the right tend to use George Soros as an example of the liberals who get their money. But Forbes 400, the top 400 richest people in the world, of the top 10, five of the top 10 are three Walton family members and two Koch brothers. The combined wealth of those five billionaires is over the Kochs are about 100 million, and the Waltons are, I think, 40 apiece. So that's roughly $200 billion in combined wealth, where George Soros has a token billionaire of 4 or 5 billion. So you're talking 5 billion versus 200 billion. So there isn't, I mean, it's not a level playing field. But the Waltons are very much involved with the charter school activities across Wisconsin and the country. And another article in the New York Times on Sunday listed the top 10 hedge fund managers and what they earned last year. And the top hedge fund manager made a paltry $3.5 billion. These kinds of dollars, I mean, when you're talking millions, that's chump change to these people, hundreds of millions. The Koch brothers could drop literally $1 billion and not even worry about it, where the left is not going to be able to keep up. So the race is on, and the conservatives are winning, and I just wish I was more hopeful, but it doesn't seem to be a fair fight, and the numbers are just staggering.
But what do you think about, I mean, ProPublica is giving us a different vision of what's going on in North Carolina, where there evidently are a lot of liberals who have a lot of money, and they're spending almost as much on these state Senate races and the U.S. Senate race from ProPublica's analysis of this, saying that they have to play the game the same way. So there are a lot of liberals who have a lot of money, right? They're spending almost the same amount of money in that state. What do you make of that?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, sure, there might be one of 50 states where they're competitive, but the 49 states where they're not. I mean, from a global perspective, I mean, you look at the macro picture, if you've got two families who have $200 billion in net worth, I mean, even Warren Buffett isn't going to be able to compete with that kind of dollar. So I think the tsunami of finances is definitely going to benefit the conservatives, and maybe North Carolina has figured out a way, but there's 49 other states where, you know, it's not going to be possible.
Mm. Thank you, Mike, for the call. What about those other 49 states, Theo?
Well, I think there are certainly plenty of wealthy liberal donors who are increasingly willing to spend money on politics and spend a lot of money. Matea Gold had a good piece in the Washington Post a couple of days ago about a gathering of wealthy Democratic donors in Chicago who are part of the Democracy Alliance. And the president of that group said something that she quoted him that you sort of see many liberals saying. Saying that although that they did not support sort of the unlimited campaign spending, that, you know, that they were, that there was no sort of alternative to spending as much money as they could so that they could get in power and change the system.
Thanks, Mike, for your call. We go to another Mike, this one in Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
All right, Mike, how are you?
Well, I'm doing fine. I have a different twist to the last caller. It's obvious where he got his statistics from the New York Times. If you check with the government themselves, the Koch brothers are 54th in on the list of contributors, and they're not one of the wealthiest people in a couple of the wealthiest people in this country. They're down there on the list also. And as far as contributors, in the top 10 are unions, and one of those is teachers' unions.
That's not true.
This is according to the government themselves.
Yeah, it's not true about the Koch brothers, Mike. They're among the 10 wealthiest people in the country. They're not way down the list.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are.
No, they're not.
Theo, aren't they?
I believe that each of the Kochs is among the wealthiest people in the country.
Yeah. What about the teachers union? What about those that group, which has, are they way at the top in terms of campaign contributions or unions for that matter?
There's no question that unions spend lots of money on politics. A lot of what our reporting at ProPublica has focused on, though, is groups that both spend a lot on politics and do not disclose their donors. Unions, for the most part, are disclose where that money is coming from and disclose what they're spending on. What we have focused on is groups that we don't know where the money is coming from.
And it would appear that we are moving more and more in that direction, aren't we? It wasn't all that long ago that we were talking about public financing of campaigns and a way to take money out of the system, which could potentially lead to corruption. Holy Toledo, has the conversation ever changed, hasn't it?
Yeah, it definitely has changed. And you're spending, the growth of, you're seeing the growth of outside groups that both do disclose their donors, such as super PACs, and ones that don't disclose their donors for the most part, such as all these nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Mike, thank you very much for the call. Forbes is reporting David Koch is the sixth wealthiest man in the world. That's from Forbes. Billionaires, one of the most wealthy billionaires. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Jay in Stevens Point. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Jay.
It seems to me that... Hello?
Yeah, we're here.
It seems to me that spending money is an act of voting. And, if we buy steaks, we're voting for steaks. If we buy Volkswagens, we're voting for them. We shouldn't be able to give money to candidates who we can't vote for. They should be our representatives. But then, unlimited,
But then what? I missed what was before that. What, Jay?
Then you could give unlimited just to your guy, your candidate, Like if in a Senate race for the state, everybody in the state could give to that candidate unlimited. Or the country for president. But if you're just talking about, your local representative to, state government, it should only be those people who that person represents or would represent in an election that should be able to give money to their campaign. Spending money is an act of voting already. If you're spending money on somebody else's candidate, it's like you're voting in somebody else's election.
Well, what about if you give $100 million and somebody else you support the same candidate gives $2? Who's going to get the phone call answered?
Well, obviously the person who has more power and influence, but as long as it's your senator who you're giving it to or your president or your, not somebody else's senator,
Okay, how would that be as a system, Theo?
I'm not sure anyone has advanced, any sort of system in which you would be able to do that. I can tell you that I was at a Senate Rules Committee hearing last week where several Democratic senators voiced their support for a constitutional amendment and said they would try to bring, a vote on an amendment to the Senate floor that would specifically give Congress the power to regulate campaign finance and would allow them to get around Supreme Court rulings that found this unconstitutional. That amendment, doesn't really have a shot at passing, but that is, sort of an indication of where the conversation is at right now.
Thanks, Jay, very much for the call. We have lines open right now. Our number is 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're talking this hour about a couple different issues. The overall theme is money and politics. Theo is ProPublica's reporting fellow, and they wrote an article that caught our attention. Liberal outside money groups spend big in North Carolina. We tend to associate big spending with conservatives, but And they have, since 2010, conservative groups have far outspent liberal counterparts. In the 2012 federal election cycle alone, conservatives, our guest writes, shelled out almost 2.5 times the amount of outside money as liberal groups. But if you look at spending on TV ads in North Carolina that look at liberal groups praising Senator Kay Hagan, they're spending almost as much money as conservative groups, and you wonder if it's going to be a trend. And it's just, you know, a huge amount of money any way you look at it. We're also, simply because it's very much in the news today and is related to campaign spending, although we can't flush this out as thoroughly as we would like, and we will later, and I believe Joy will tomorrow morning. We're also looking at the federal judge ruling yesterday, throwing out John 2 in Wisconsin, which also has to do with campaign spending and other kinds of issues. But the Supreme Court decision was referenced in Judge Randa's decision on John Doe 2. So we are, if you want to comment on that, you can do that. But we have yet to get to, our guest talked about the Senate taking this up, Vermont. Would it take to get this money out of politics? Would it take other states like Vermont is thinking of doing, having a constitutional convention and saying enough is enough? Or are you okay with the whole thing? What do you think? 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And KP has put together a list of the wealthiest people in the world, too. So we will read that. It's always good to know that. As we got into a bit of a controversy about the Koch brothers, they're up there, but Bill Gates is number one. All right, back to you in a moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And Brad on Facebook says, liberals feel they have to sell out and schmooze the deep-pocketed just to compete with Republicans flush with money from fat cats. The result? Both parties are corporatist. Republicans especially. What did some people, you quoted some people, Theo, in the article as saying that they really, in order to play the game, they had to play with an equal amount of money.
Yeah, this is a sentiment that you've heard many people express, that they might not like the current campaign finance rules. But as one person told me, that you can't bring a knife to a gunfight, or you know, something similar like that. That as long as these are the rules, that's what they're going to play by.
Thanks, Jay. John on Facebook says that everybody should read George Washington's farewell address. It describes our modern political system to a T, especially the part about the mischiefs of party. John Paul is next in Janesville. Hi, John Paul.
Hi there. I just wanted to comment on what Jay was saying about the outside influences within our state and within different states. I think he was trying to get at is that there's a lot of outside influences for, like, the major governors and senator roles. And I was wondering, why has it not been discussed about funds coming from within the state instead of, you know, like Walker from Illinois and whatnot? There was so much money that came in from out of state. And that's about it.
All right. And we should clarify, are we looking at outside money that's coming into North Carolina or how much inside money, Theo?
We didn't try to break it down between what is outside and what is inside, partly because it's a little bit hard to define that. One of the groups that we looked at, for instance, I think was headquartered in Tennessee, but had a big office in North Carolina, an outside environmental group. So does that count as an outside group or does that count as an in-state group? Or the group, coalition of groups, rather, that was spending big in these North Carolina, or on ads that mentioned state Senate candidates in North Carolina. The group is called the North Carolina Environmental Partnership. But one of the big backers of the ads is the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is, of course, a national group.
Mm-hmm.
So is that a North Carolina group? Is that an outside group? It's a little hard to tell sometimes.
Yeah. Tell me about what's going on in Vermont. Last week, they called for a convention to amend the U.S. Constitution to address this issue. First state to do that?
I am not sure if that is the first state or not. But as you know, it takes at least two-thirds of the states to call for a national convention that would be put together by Congress. So I think Vermont will need 33 more states to join with it before they get that convention rolling.
And when you look at, not that this is likely to happen for a long, long time, but if you had a massive number of Americans very, very upset with this incredible amount of money in politics in this country, the only way to really change that, do you think, would be an amendment to the U.S. Constitution?
Well, one of the interesting things that Senator Tom Udall, who was on that Senate Rules Committee hearing last week, said, he said at the hearing that it was crystal clear to him that an amendment to the Constitution is necessary to allow meaningful campaign finance rules. So I thought that was really interesting just because, you know, saying that it would take an amendment to the Constitution, that is a very big hurdle to get over, and certainly indicates that, you know, you won't see Congress trying to take this up again anytime soon.
Right. Let's go next to Jeff in Columbus. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. I was just wondering if you could, what if you could tax the political contributions and then, like, at a high rate, like 30% or something, and then, granted, that would hurt the small contributions, but that money then would come back as an education fund or a healthcare fund or something like that. Is it legal to even tax something like that?
It's certainly an interesting idea. I have no idea whether or not it would be legal. A lot of the groups that you've seen set up, and certainly what we have termed dark money groups, are groups that are nonprofits and do not pay taxes. And that is why the amount of money that they can spend on politics is limited, because the IRS limits the amount that what are called social welfare nonprofits. Most of their activity has to be for, quote-unquote, social welfare and not on political activity. So if these groups, you know, wanted to pay taxes and not set up as nonprofits, then theoretically they would be able to spend as much money as they want on politics without, you know, any interference from the IRS.
Thank you, Jeff. Mike in Milwaukee. Hi. Mike, are you there?
Oh, is this me?
Yeah, it is. Hi, Mike.
Oh, well, sorry. I didn't know he'd put me right on. There is a big movement, and it started right in the University of Wisconsin in Madison, in the law department, was a 28th Amendment to the Constitution, and it's going across the country and getting support from communities, states, and universities. People are signing referendums to get... or signing petitions to get it on a referendum on a ballot so that each community can agree to saying in the 28th Amendment would say money is not speech and corporations are not people. So that's straightened out once and for all. And the regardless of how creative the Supreme Court wants to be, they can't get past that, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah, that's why we put you through, because I was not aware of this. When did this movement start, Mike? Do you know?
Well, I was at one of the first meetings, and that would be right after the Citizens United. I think that was in December, the end of whatever year that was. And then it was that December, and then the second meeting was in January.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, any listeners, if they're interested, can go to movetoamend.org, and they can... if they want to get involved and get this referendum on a ballot, they can get each community. And the whole process is to educate the public about the need for this, in addition to getting support for a future amendment. The problem is this current movement that we just got. This is a kind of a dangerous situation, but a few weeks ago, the state of Michigan signed on, and it put it over the amount that's needed to have a constitutional convention, and that may open up the whole Constitution for a rewrite.
Hmm.
And Wisconsin signed on to that just before. before they closed, and that should have made news, but nobody's talking about it right now.
Mm-hmm.
So this amendment for move to amend may be kind of not paid attention to because this other thing might be a little bigger.
Yeah. Thank you, Mike. Thanks for the information. We may do a show on that down the road here. We're talking about money and politics this hour of the program, and our guest is Theo Meyer. He is ProPublica's reporting fellow and wrote an interesting piece because they were tracking what's going on in North Carolina, where they have found that in state races, some state Senate races, which hasn't happened before, liberals are pouring money into those races and have poured in almost equal to conservatives, the money pouring into the Senate race. And why that's happening and how much money is involved and if other states are going to follow suit. And then we look at the whole issues of who's got the money and the overriding issue of the amount of money in politics and whether or not it is of concern to you. I promised you I would read you the wealthiest people in the world simply because this is always amazing when you look at how much money. And we got into a bit of a disagreement about the Koch brothers. Number one is Bill Gates, worth $77 billion from the U.S., of course. Carlos Elu and family from Mexico, worth $71 billion. $65 billion Warren Buffett, of course, from the U.S. Amancio Ortega from Spain, worth $63 billion. Larry Ellison, from Oracle, U.S., $49 billion. Charles Koch, $40 billion, number six. And David Koch, $40 billion as well, same amount of money, also from the U.S. Chrissy Walton and family, $33.3 billion. Sheldon Adelson, $37.7 billion. And Jim Walton, $36.1 billion. Just for your information. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, back to phone calls. Dark money politics is the focus of this hour with Theo Meyer, and we go next to Gary in Foxwood. Hi, Gary.
Hi, hello. How you doing?
All right, how are you?
I was listening to the radio station. It's kind of interesting when you were talking about the Koch brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that one's $40 billion and the other one's $40 billion. I understand they kind of work together when their campaigns and everything. I'm kind of curious, what place would they be in with $80 billion?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
What place would they be in with $80 billion? They each got $40 billion, and they both work together, you know, with $40 billion, that's $80 billion. But I think that would move their rankings up from sixth to where it might be. Well, anyway, I was just curious about that.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention that, you know, an outside source contributing in a local election such as Wisconsin. A good example of what's wrong with that law is Walker received, I understand, around $30 million. And that didn't come from the local people of the state. I guess it came from quite a few outsources. And I think Koch brothers were one of them. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's never identified of who's donating. And Barrett, who was the mayor of, who was a Democratic participant, only had $3.5 million. Now, that's like a 10-to-1 situation where you can get outside source money. And I think the problem with this law that they made, allowing these outside sources, is you're taking the local elections out of the picture. And
mm-hmm.
it's very unfair to either party.
Mm-hmm.
And especially it seems in the Republican and the Democrats, it seems like the Republicans are getting a few dollars more. And well, that's my point.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much for the call, Gary. And the numbers that he cited for the midterm elections were very much true. I guess we'll have to wait and see if there other states are anything like North Carolina. It could be a different picture in 2014. A couple callers have expressed concern about people in a state not being able to have, well, they do have one voice, one vote, but all the money that's coming in from out of state, considering this a problem. It's the way politics are now, isn't it, Theo?
Well, there certainly are states that have their own campaign finance laws, and that in some cases groups have gone to great lengths to get around. we wrote about a case that's become somewhat infamous in California that involved two California, I believe, ballot measure initiatives where groups tried to get around campaign finance or California's campaign finance laws, or at least it certainly seemed like they tried to get around it, by transferring the money out of state and then through sort of a daisy chain of nonprofits to get it back into the state without disclosing who had originally given that money. The most recent caller also mentioned the Koch brothers and their wealth, which several callers have. I just wanted to point out that it's not just the Koch brothers that are spending. It's sort of a network that they have set up and are just sort of the most prominent members of. But when we talk about the Koch network, that's actually, you know, we believe many donors who are giving to that. They hold sort of semi-annual retreats. So it's not simply the Kochs that are financing all of it. It's sort of the network of many nonprofits that they have put together.
Thanks very much, Gary, for your call. Guy in Preston. Hi. Hi, Guy. I guess Guy is not there anymore. I'm sorry. Let's go to David in Ironwood, Michigan. Hi, David.
Yes. Another thing I was thinking about is how much foreign money coming into our elections. But the main point I wanted to make is I own a 401k, yet these corporations do not ask my permission to spend my money on candidates I disagree with. I think that's totally wrong.
All right. Thanks very much for your call. You want to comment, Theo?
That's certainly something that you heard mentioned about at that Senate hearing last week on campaign finance, this sort of idea of that it helps people hold corporations accountable as well if you have more sort of disclosure laws.
Let's go to Mark Bayside. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I'm just wondering, isn't there some kind of a ceiling effect where, you know, you can give so much money and you reach a point of diminishing returns? You can only buy so much television time, and, you know, and the amount of money necessary to influence votes, you just can't. There's only a certain amount that you can spend without saturating the market.
Yeah, and without saturating your the viewers' ability to take this stuff in. I remember some elections, I'm sure you do too, Mark, where you're seeing the same darn commercial running within 2 minutes. You know, it's a 30-second and then something else, then the same commercial. Enough is enough. Has anybody studied that, Theo?
Yeah, I'm not sure what sort of research there's been into what the point of diminishing returns is for this. And, you know, it may depend on the race. But I certainly would be interested to see what that point is.
Right. It's almost as though you have so much money, well, we got to spend it. So let's just put it in the same 5-minute break period. And who cares if it's effective or not? We're saturating a market and maybe it'll be effective, but we got the money. So let's spend it.
I bet there are political scientists who have studied it, but I am not familiar with the research.
Let's now go to Guy, who is back, I believe. Guy is calling us from Adams County. Hi, Guy.
How are you doing, Kathleen? I love your show. I love your guest.
Thanks, Guy.
I would just like to comment. I believe it was President Theodore Roosevelt that tried to enact legislation that would limit the contribution of any citizen to no more than $100. Wouldn't that solve this whole mess?
Can you imagine that? How would it? Let's just imagine that for a moment, Theo. How would everything change?
It would certainly be a dramatic change.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, obviously one of the things you've seen is this shift in jurisprudence over how much you, you know, are able to constitutionally limit campaign finance. So, I mean, this is what, you know, Citizens United and the McCutcheon decision has been about. McCutcheon, of course, you know, eliminated the sort of aggregate limit that you could give to four candidates, but there are still, you know, limits in place for individual contributions to individual candidates.
Right. Tom in Wausau emailed, barring corporations and other special interests is not enough. We have to get people from elsewhere, meaning out of state, out of county, out of local campaigns. The only way is a constitutional amendment, which, one, defines corporations for what they are, a creature of legislation, and, two, bars them from political activities, three, limiting campaign contributions to those legally able to vote for the recipient. Absent anything, this will only produce ways around obstacles. All amendments have to be very clear about exactly what we want. What do you think? Is it going to change, Theo?
I'm sort of surprised at the amount of enthusiasm that your listeners have expressed for a constitutional amendment, because it's, you know, just such a really high hurdle to get one passed, and the divisions in Congress are so, you know, so stark on this issue. At this hearing, you saw Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas and Senator Ted Cruz of Texas speak out very forcefully against. You know, any sort of new campaign finance regulation, which they contend is a limit on free speech. So I just don't think the votes are there in Congress to have any sort of constitutional amendment on this anytime soon.
So what are you working on now?
We are continuing to cover campaign finance, and we will be continuing to do so at ProPublica for probably the rest of the year through the midterm elections. If you're interested in finding out more, we have all of our campaign finance contribution or stories together under the heading Buying Your Vote, which you can find at www.propublica.org.
Buying Your Vote. And the web again, www.propublica.org?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, great. All right, thank you very much. And I'm wondering, are you going to be looking specifically, you were looking at North Carolina, is there another state where there are similar dynamics at play where you can figure out if this is part of a growing trend, Theo?
There are definitely other states with big U.S. Senate races, Arkansas, where Mark Pryor is running for re-election, and Louisiana, where Mary Landrieu is running for re-election, and the race for the open seat in Michigan. One of the reasons that we took a look at North Carolina in particular is because three of its markets are in the top 50 largest markets, which the FCC has said must supply their the four largest stations there must supply their advertising contracts and put them online. So Arkansas, Little Rock, is not one of the largest markets in the country, so we had no way to take a look at their TV ad contracts. Starting this summer, I believe, the FCC will require all television stations to put their contracts online, all the markets. So that will give us a sort of a window into states that don't have one.
Well, just briefly, how can the FCC do that, but the FEC doesn't do that?
So the FCC started doing this back in 2012. They started by requiring the 50 largest market stations there to put their ad contracts online, and then it moved to, or will move this year, to having all the markets do that.
All right, our guest this hour, we thank him, Theo Meyer, ProPublica's reporting fellow, and that's all the information on, you know, this whole thing, money and politics, you can find at their website because they've been doing a lot of research on it. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour, and thanks to KP as well for on-air production in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the botched execution in Oklahoma and the scarcity of drugs used in lethal injections.